This is ProBlogger.
My name's Darren Rouse and welcome to episode 208 of the ProBlogger podcast. I'm the blogger behind ProBlogger.com, a blog, podcast, event, job board, and a series of ebooks all designed to help you as a blogger to grow your audience and to make money from your blogs. You can learn more about ProBlogger over at ProBlogger.com. Now today, I want to present you with five actionable things that you can do today to increase the effectiveness of what you do on your Facebook page. I know there's a lot of pain among our audience when it comes to Facebook pages. I see it all the time in our Facebook group. Just a couple of years ago now, Facebook was a major source of traffic and engagement for many of us. It even helped us to monetize our blogs directly in many cases. But increasingly over the last couple of years, Facebook have been making it so much tougher to get organic reach and engagement on Facebook. You can certainly pay to get it, but that organic reach is disappearing for many of us, and we hear that pain from you, our audience, quite regularly. So today what I've done is invited someone who understands Facebook, as well as anyone I've ever met, to come onto the show to talk to us about how to approach Facebook. That person is Rachel Miller from Moolah Marketing, whose teaching has impacted my own Facebook strategy over the last 6 months. Quite incredibly, in fact. She's taught me so much. Rachel began her journey many years ago now as a blogger, but in more recent times has created Facebook pages that reach millions of fans, and she talks about some of them in today's episode. She has a real knack for building audiences and monetizing them directly on Facebook itself. Now, I met Rachel back in 2015 at a conference. We had a nice breakfast together and a few other people, and I was really impressed by what she was doing back then. But it wasn't until earlier this year that I really dug into what she does. Another friend had recommended her Facebook group, which I'll link to in today's show notes. It's a Facebook group dedicated to helping online entrepreneurs with their Facebook pages. And I joined it. I'm a member of many Facebook groups, and this is probably one of the most valuable ones that I've ever joined. I joined it 6 months ago, and immediately, within a couple of days, I was getting tips and ideas from Rachel and the other members of that community that led to real growth on my Facebook pages. It was immediate, like within a day or two, and me taking action, very important, on the tips that I got in that group, I was amazed. So I was so impressed with what she offered that when she opened up her Facebook training course, I signed up to it. The course is really brilliant, but so is a lot of the free advice that she gives as well. And that's what I want to do today. I want to get her on to share some of what she knows about Facebook. Of course, this is a massive topic, and we could quite easily talk for days on this topic, which I guess is why she offers a course. But I brought her on to today's episode to really talk about five actionable things. I asked her to nominate five things that really will help people without having to pay money, without having to boost your post, without having to advertise. Five things that you can do today. And so that's the focus of this episode. There are, of course, many things that you can do to spend money on Facebook, but these are five actionable things that are going to help you to get better results from your Facebook page. Now, I will say before we get into the conversation that there is a downloadable for today. Rachel's put together what she calls an audience growth pack, which has three resources for you on helping you to create better titles for your Facebook, start better conversations on Facebook, and also some words to avoid on Facebook as well. If you want to get those downloadables, it's over at ProBlogger.com/growth. ProBlogger.com/growth, and I'll link to them on the show notes as well. You can see today's show notes over at ProBlogger.com/podcast/208. That's the episode 208 today. You'll also find us over on iTunes. I really do hope you enjoy this conversation. I literally just got off it from Rachel, and I have a pad full of ideas that I've jotted down as we talked, and you'll hear me talk about a couple of the things that I'm going to do as a result of today's show as well. I hope you enjoy it. She's got so much energy and enthusiasm for this topic. I'm sure you'll get a lot out of it as well. Here we go.
Creating great content, finding an audience, building engagement, monetizing your blog. This is ProBlogger.
So, Rachel, this conversation comes at a really good time because on two Facebook groups that I'm a part of, I have just seen people going on massive rants about Facebook and how it is dead to them because their organic reach is plummeting, particularly this week. It seems to be quite a few people are really struggling with it. So I'm really grateful for you spending some time with us today to talk about Facebook. And I guess my first question for you is, should they be giving up on Facebook? Are Facebook pages dead?
I strongly believe no, because I mean, I've seen people grow so fast, and even just these last 6 weeks, we've had a student explode their page. I mean, I don't know if she's the record because I have to like verify, but she tells me that she's grown by over 100,000 fans. So yeah, so she might just be my new record, but yeah, it's been insane seeing the growth that people have had.
Yeah. It's happening right now. Is that translating across to, you know, their websites or their blogs or whatever it is that they're building as well?
Yes. No, I have one girl who just a couple days ago, a couple weeks ago, she told me she was making $1,000 off of her website. And after taking the course, she now makes $8,000 this last month off of her website. And she was like, oh my word, I never expected this. And it just came from ad revenue because she was had more people seeing her content.
Yeah, so she was able to drive much more traffic across.
Yes, so she had a couple virals, and that helped her just explode her ad revenue.
Great. All right, so what I was hoping you'd say that, because otherwise this interview is dead, because I really want to dig into some of the teaching that you do.
We've had businesses. I know your audience is bloggers, and I actually was a blogger for like 10 years, so that's how I got started. But we've actually had stores who've had even greater results. We had one author, it was their second book on CreateSpace, or it's a second, I can't remember exactly how many books on CreateSpace, but he sold $71,000 worth of his book last month. So he was posting his paycheck everywhere. It was so exciting.
That's exciting. That's exciting. Okay. Well, I've done half of your course and I've seen some benefits starting to flow onto our pages as well. But I really loved kind of the journey you take students through. And I wonder if we can kind of move through some of the things that I think most bloggers could really benefit from. Five actionable tips, we're calling it, that people can use to build their audience as well without spending money, which is the other important part. Yeah. First one was building your niche neighborhood. You talk about that early on in your course. I wonder if you could give us a definition of what is a niche neighborhood and what can we actually do to build that?
Well, when I think of niche neighborhoods, I like to think of this as a family instead of a competition. Because how many of you, or this was me like 3 years ago. I was like, you know what? I have a DIY site. I don't want to tell the DIY people what I'm doing, because they might copy me. And then we'll all have the same front porch post, and it'll be really frustrating because they'll all have the same post and we won't, you know, grow together. And so it was like almost limiting beliefs of I was self-protectionist. Like, I'm not going to share my knowledge. And then I realized that, wait a second, if I open it up and I connect with my competition, I don't just grow, they grow. And when they grow, they kind of pull me up farther with them. So when they're having a viral explode, I can tag along with their big viral. And then when I'm having a big viral, they can tag along, because the reality is the DIY person who loves DIY house projects, they're not following one blog, they're following 15. And I've noticed that actually in the crazy, I also have a cat blog, in the crazy cat sphere, which I'm not actually a cat person. It was kind of a joke that I started it and then it was super successful. So it was like, I guess I'm a cat person now. and that blog, those people, I found multiple fans that love six crazy cat lady pages. They're named the same name.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So it's about identifying other Facebook pages in your niche. And then what do you actually do once you've identified them?
There's a couple of different tricks that you can do. Basically, you want to use Facebook like it's a search engine. So just like in Google, you want to have different links coming from different places going to your website. And you want them to come with different terms to your website. It's kind of the same thing in Facebook. So Facebook's an algorithm, so it's like a search engine. It's a computer. And so you have to speak the computer's language. And so it's things like finding a cat page, I'm a cat page, interlinking my post with their Facebook posts. And you can do this even if they're not participating, although it's a whole lot more fun if they are like your best buds in your neighborhood and you're hopping over to their house. Okay, it's getting a little carried away, but
yeah.
So it's a lot easier when you have collaboration where they'll say, hey, I'm going to share your post and you're going to share mine. But at the same time, you can do this without them participating by leaving a link on one of their as a comment or as a visitor's post or tagging your page on one of their photos that they have if they have open tags. Leaving them a message from your page, writing them a message through Messenger, anything to say my page is just like that page.
So these are all little signals to Facebook that you should connect our pages in some way, which
I'm the same as this page. So that audience from that page will also like my content. So when that person runs out of their cool content and my content's trending, Facebook's going to show my trending post to them because Facebook wants to keep those people on Facebook. So once my post is doing well, Facebook's like, whoa, wait a second. All these neighbors, they're going to want that post too because it's keeping people on Facebook.
And is the other part when someone likes their page, then Facebook says there are other pages like this one, and it gives that little personal recommendation as well.
Yes. Right now, Facebook's giving that recommendation to groups, but 3 weeks ago it was pages. And my guess is that in 2 months, it's going to change right back to being pages again. And then 2 months later, groups. So it goes back and forth between the two. But you can also niche neighborhood with groups. You don't just have to niche neighborhood with pages. That concept works with groups. And we actually have like groups that connect with pages as part of our system.
Yeah. So, okay. So the actionable thing that people can do is to identify some other pages in their niche. Can you give us a suggestion on which ones are the best ones to do? Should you be looking for the biggest ones? Should you be looking at sort of others around your size or smaller ones?
I look for the smaller ones that are the most active. Because the smaller ones that are the most active are the easiest to game. Just like in keywords, you go for the long tail because no one else has it, right? If I go after the big dogs, well, everybody's going after the big dogs or everyone's trying to promote their content on theirs. The little dogs, they're so thankful to have a visitor's post. They're thrilled. So I connect with the smaller pages first and then grow to the bigger ones.
Yeah. Okay, so actionable tip, identify some other, and engage. And really is, whilst you say you can do this without them really even knowing what you're doing, but the ideal is really to build that relationship with other page owners and then to be able to collaborate and look for ways to support one another, build a win-win relationship there.
Yeah, totally. So, but at the same time, even if there's some people who say, well, I don't have any friends or I feel awkward writing them, you can still connect with other pages without necessarily their permission.
You're listening to Pro Blogger.
Okay, so number one is build your niche neighborhood. Number two is around sharing the right content. So many of us have Facebook pages, but we spend all our time sharing our own content. And I'm guilty of this. Don't look at my pages at the moment because I've just got this really high rotation of my own content because I've got thousands of posts in my archives. This used to work really well. It drove a lot of traffic to our pages, to our blogs, but hasn't been working as well lately as a tactic. One of the things that you do in your teaching is talking about finding content and sharing content that's been blessed by Facebook's fairy dust.
I wonder
whether you can talk to us about, one, what is the Facebook fairy dust that none of us have heard of before? And, you know, what do you actually mean by that?
Fairy dust, I like to call it fairy dust because it's a little bit like magical because it can't quite quantify it, but yet it's dust that so you can collect it and you can bank it and you can hoard it and you can spread it. You can, you know, sprinkle it on different things. So it's, and you do collect it. So that's one of those things. But it's a little bit of magic. So I call it fairy dust. Some people call it the Facebook juju or the juice or, you know, oh, I got the blessing or I won the Facebook lottery, you know, but basically, these are the posts that Facebook is sending more organic traffic to. And Facebook tells you which ones they are because you can just go to the Facebook search bar and type in cats and you can see all the cat posts that Facebook says is trending right now.
Okay, so it's about working out what you want to share, the topic, and then just simply doing a search for that. Are you looking there for links or photos or videos or all of those things?
I do a mix. It depends on what size the page is. So with my newer pages, I want to share whatever's the most getting the most likes. When my page is over 100,000, though, I want to share something that's getting more shares than likes. And I also want the content to come from me if possible. So I would see a photo that's getting a lot of shares right now and say, hey, why don't I contact that person and say, hey, can I put your photo up on my page?
Okay. And then you're crediting where you got it from, which I guess sometimes has some flow-on effects to them.
If it's just people, they just give me their video and they say, yeah, sure. Yeah. And I don't offer credit unless I know it's a blogger. If it's a regular person, they often are like, yeah, you can show my cat drinking milk from that food bowl and link to that Amazon product. That's awesome. My cat's on your page.
Yeah.
Like, they're totally happy. So I just say it's reader submitted.
Yeah. Okay. So we're looking there for content that Facebook's already loving, blessing, fairy dusting, and then sharing that. Is that a part of the mix? Are you also including some of your own content in the mix? Getting this mix right, I think, is something that a lot of our readers do ask about. You know, how much of other people's content should we be sharing? How much of our own? And does that change over the life of your blog as well?
It does a little bit. It depends on your engagement. So when you're smaller, I like to share 3/4 other people's content because that I'm training myself what's popular. I have no clue what's going viral in my niche until I interact with so many virals. But as I grow over 50,000, I want to start doing more posts coming from me, from my page. So I might have 2 out of every 4 coming from my page. That doesn't necessarily mean it's my post, but it's originating on my page. So it's a video cross-post or uploaded. It's a photo that I've uploaded onto my page. That way the juice leads back to my page. And then at 100,000, I want 3/4 of the content to come from my page and 1/4 to come from other sources.
Yeah. And in terms of getting traffic to your blog, because this is what a lot of bloggers want. I mean, ultimately, I guess it's about earning. And whether you get people to your blog or not doesn't really matter. But a lot of bloggers do want to increase their traffic. Can you give us some tips of getting that content, that traffic back to our blog?
Yeah, it's the way you feed Facebook. So if you use like Bitly links, those have no social proof. So Facebook's not going to show it to as many people. If you add multiple links to your posts, so instead of having one link that leads to your blog, you have a link and your pin it button, your pin it link, that's driving people to... it's going to lower your reach of your blog, of your traffic to your website. And then a lot of it's things like the words you're using, the titles, the photos, if you're feeding your reader, if you're giving them the things that make them happy and you've optimized your page with other content, so you're already engaged, it's kind of like a rising tide and it will bring in your content will also grow. So once you grow your engagement, traffic comes.
Yeah. And that's what I found in doing your course is that once I started to share a bit more of other people's content and a bit more of that viral content and even creating a few more of the meme type content for myself, which I've always resisted. I've always found it a little bit corny or a little bit, but there are ways if you work at it, you can create that kind of content that has the potential to go viral. It then impacted the rest of our content, which was links to our blog posts and that type of thing, I guess.
Exactly. So it's kind of looking at it as a whole picture. Because if you just focus on just getting your traffic to your site, you're not going to grow your audience. And if you grow your audience, it trickles down and you will rise in your traffic because you have more people seeing your content now.
Yeah. It's a bit of a mind shift, I think, for a lot of bloggers because they have this sense, I want to drive traffic to me. I don't want to highlight other people's stuff, but it does have a flow-on effect.
It totally does. And know, too, it's about your reader because if you make it about your reader and you serve your audience, you can drive traffic to them with your blog or you can make money any way. So once you have that audience, you can do anything with it. It doesn't just have to be the blog. The blog's one way to make money, but ask your readers, do you want to consume content on a blog or do you want to consume content in a different way? Oh, you like memes that have affiliate links and you buy products that are almost unrelated to the meme because it had an affiliate link on it. Okay, not a problem. I can make money that way. So different audiences have different things that you can serve them with. They'll tell you what they want.
Great. You mentioned titles there, and that's the third thing I wanted to ask you a little bit about. One of the things that I've noticed makes a huge difference when I'm sharing content, whether it be photos or back to my own site, is that the engagement can vary wildly depending upon which words we use in our titles and the descriptions as well. I wonder if you can give us some tips on how to create more effective copy, I guess. It's not just the title; it's all of the words you use around your updates.
Yeah,
I'd love to get some tips on that.
Yeah, well, we've got like three different parts of a post. So you've got the headline. That's mm-hmm. Your description. That's not so much your headline. That's what you type into the status update, right? Mm. And then you've got your link, and then you've got the actual title of the post. Mm. So in the description section where I'm talking about the post that I'm sharing, I like to talk from my reader's perspective. So I don't want to tell them about this apple pie I made with my Aunt Cindy because no one else has an Aunt Cindy. And so that's not their experience. So they can't connect to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
But if I can say the apple pie that totally made July 4th or totally made your Memorial Day weekend or whatever, the holiday, Labor Day is coming up, totally made that weekend, that makes sense for them because, oh, that could be my story.
Yeah.
You want to say it like it's their story. So that's my first tip is in your descriptions, putting them into the reader's perspective, not about you. My next tip would be to feed Facebook with that. So, and don't look like a brand. Which I guess we're going to talk about in just a few minutes, but not looking like a brand means what do brands do on Facebook and how can I look like a person and not the brand? So like a reader, essentially the people that we're reaching to, they're probably not filling their feed with lots of hashtags. They're probably not tagging 1500 things. So just like the reader wouldn't use hashtags, you want to speak like them. So that would be my second tip is to avoid hashtags and then those links that Facebook doesn't like. And then my third tip is to use, like, I have a formula for my titles. And it's like a trust factor, and then an emotion, and you, because I'm talking to the reader, and then the result. So trust factor would be something like the number, or guaranteed, or these words that kind of instill, I believe in you. So if you tell them a number, like there's 15 ways, 15 is telling them what they're going to get, so that's establishing trust with them. Like if I click this, I'll see 15 things. I can trust it more because I know what I'm going to get. So it just gives a little bit of a trust factor. And then the next part is an emotion. So 15, totally awesome or awestrucking, 15 emotion. And then you, anytime you use the word you in your titles, you'll do better.
Yeah.
And then you won't believe what happened when, and then the result.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got trust factor, emotion, you as in the audience, and then the result as well.
So can you give us think of that as a number if you can't think of another.
Something concrete, I guess, that so they know what they're getting on the other end of it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And we find
variations of this. Like we've got, I have 26. I went through actually and looked at my virals. Last year I had 29 virals. Those are virals that each of the posts got to over 1 million eyeballs on an individual post. And so I went through those virals and I was like, okay, what's similar about these posts? Like what made these go viral versus other ones? And I collected all the titles and put them into a spreadsheet for you guys. And so you could take out the words. So I say, 15 ways your husband could wash the dishes better. And I take out the words.
Oh, we don't want that.
Wash the dishes, 15 ways something could blah, blah, blah better. And so you can switch out the words for your own. Basically steal those viral titles. And I give that to your audience as a freebie. So
yeah. So we do have the audience growth pack, which we'll talk a little bit about at the end of the call as well, but that is part of that. So it's a downloadable you can find on our show notes today. And I went through that and today's Facebook posts are all got viral titles.
Once you do that though, I have one of the people that I'm friends with and is in the course. She took those titles and she gave them to her VAs. She's like, okay, this is the first one. Here's the second one, the third one. She said that she was able to sketch out her content for like a week in like 30 minutes because she had all the titles. She just swapped them out. I'm like, it works.
And you start to, what we've noticed with ours is that there are other trigger words that no one else is using that just seem to work with your audience. So you really do want to do that exercise that you said and analyze the top posts, the most engaged posts on your page to then work out what's the common things. And we found every time we mention, mistakes, 10 mistakes that, will stop you from taking great photos. People click that like crazy because they want to know that mistake. And it's there's a benefit there. We use the personal term your photos a lot. It works.
And the result is no mistake. Like that's a totally killer one. That's awesome.
Yeah. The other thing we've found work really well with our audience is anytime you mention any kind of pain or any kind of gain. So using the pains and gains really works well.
Have you tried different synonyms of mistake? Like failures? Avoid these photography failures?
Yeah, it doesn't work as well.
Okay, cool.
We have tried a bit, but I mean, and I guess the other thing that we really want to be careful of is we don't want our page to be too negative as well.
Because yes.
Mistakes can bring things down a little bit. So, how to avoid them type titles work as well. So there's an upside. It's not just don't do these, but do this. That works too. And the other type of thing that we've noticed working well is really targeting in on the type of user. So we, Digital Photography School, there's lots of people there. So there's Photoshop users, there's Lightroom users, there's users of different things. So sometimes for us, starting with Lightroom users and then getting into the pain actually seems to target the right person within our bigger audience a little bit more.
When your page is over 100,000, you do need to segment your audience a little bit in order to continue to get that engagement. So I love that love it.
Creating great content and building your audience. This is ProBlogger.
Okay, so the other thing you've kind of almost hinted on there is the number four tip is to avoid certain banned words. There are words that I've noticed on our page, even before I came across your teaching, it just seemed to kill our reach.
Like
anytime we mention a product or a sale or discount or any of those sort of words, what's going on there?
And instead you can say, we'll make your pocketbook lighter. Or you can say your wallet will love this, but you can do that without saying a discount. But yeah, you use the word discount, you might as well just kiss that post goodbye. So I've noticed that anytime you use those ad or sponsored, those can lower your reach. So you have to put a couple dollars on it to kind of like to boost it, to tell Facebook, yes, I'm making money, but you can make money too. So there's some little tricks you can do if you have to use those bad words. But bad words are something like this, share this, tag your friend. Instead of that, say, know someone who, and then they'll tag their friend for you. You'll want this later. Well, now they'll save it or they'll pin it. So bookmark it because you'll need this. You know, these are all different ways that you can attract them without being bossy.
Yeah.
People don't want to be bossed. So if you're saying like this, it comes across as bossy and scammy. And it's against Facebook's terms of service. They redid this terms of service. And I think it's even in there that you're not supposed to request. So Facebook doesn't like them too much.
From their perspective, it's leads to sort of unorganic activity going on. People gaming the system a little bit. Yeah. Okay. So as part of your audience growth pack, we've also got some words to avoid as well as part of that download.
Yeah, I forgot we had a powwow where I brought in I think it was 58 frugal bloggers, and the frugal bloggers were just having the hardest time getting their content out there. And we're like, okay, guys, well, let's look at the words together. And so we're looking through all the words and we're like, okay, these are the words that are tanking. Free works, but not only if it's near the word gluten. If free is not near the word gluten, you're taking it. So you want to look at how you're putting your phrases together. And so we collected those phrases, and then we also thought of different ways to say the same things. So instead of buy one, get one free, have one and you could have another.
Gets a little awkward, but
now their posts are being seen and they're even able to get more traction on their coupons. So
that's right. So this really ties into that last point as well, is you do the analysis on what's working, but also do some analysis on what's not working and look for patterns in that as well. Maybe there is some words that you're using that are triggering Facebook to go, we're not showing that. Worth doing.
Yeah.
All right.
Fun.
The last thing that we've got here is to stimulate conversation. And again, this is something I've noticed ever since I started on Facebook, is the more conversation you get, the more engagement you get, the more engagement you get. The more conversation attracts conversation.
And you're
engagement.
Telling Facebook who you are. And Facebook needs conversation, because there are people that are up at 2 a.m. that are bored out of their skulls and they've seen everything and they need some more engaging content. So Facebook depends on us, pages and groups, to keep that person looking at something at 2 a.m., right? So the For what we've done is to try to make our pages a little bit more like groups and our groups a little bit sometimes like pages so that we can bolster our businesses. And we've got these conversation starters. And so you basically ask a question, like something that people don't have to spend any time thinking about, but that hopefully has more than three words in an answer. Because if they have more than three words in the answer, Facebook ranks it as higher, or if it uses a photo. So using GIFs, or, hey, show us a photo of your kids today. Who's your super kid? Or how old are your kids? Who here, I need help with supper. What are you eating for supper? All of these are ways to get people to just make a small, simple engagement on your page. And when they do that, not only do they see your content more often, all of their friends see that page more often. So any of their friends that also like your page, you now jumped up in their feed.
Yeah, I've certainly noticed that. And they then seem to see your next posts as well. I know that anytime I engage with any post, I quite often won't engage with a post that I want to engage with because I don't want to see more from that page. So, you know.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so again, we've got that as part of our audience growth pack to download as well, 25 conversation starters there. So you've got those three resources. Yeah, it's a great little pack to have, and I've had it, those three resources open on my browser ever since I downloaded them. I'm just constantly going back to them.
And it just doesn't just work on Facebook pages. They also work on Facebook groups. We have got a guy, Daniel, said that his group went from from crickets to highly engaged in just like 2 or 3 weeks from him putting one of those up every single day.
So. Yeah, that's great. And we've actually, what we do on ProBloggers, we've got this massive long spreadsheet of questions that our audience have asked us that now we ask them. So anytime we get asked a question, we just put it in our spreadsheet. And one, we use that for blog posts or for content that we can do or Facebook Lives. But also we just put those questions back to our audience because our audience actually know the answers collectively.
I love it.
Yeah. So, and we've got, it must be 300 or 400 now. So we've got enough that we could do one a day forever. Like we just keep rotating that through.
You can schedule up to like a couple months in advance. So schedule them out. And the cool thing is this type of system, the copy, the headlines, and then the words I'm giving you, the conversation starters, you can literally just copy them, put them in the schedule and turn it on like an autopilot. That lets you now have two posts that you don't have to fight about. You don't have to think about. They just come, you know, takes all
That's
the work
great. Out. So we've got build your niche neighborhood, share the right content, use effective titles, avoid banned words, and stimulate conversation.
Yes.
Five things that you can go away and do today.
I love it.
Yeah, that's great. So a few other questions that we had come in from our group members, because I said we were doing an interview today, and they thought they'd throw some questions at you too. And they kind of, some of them relate a little bit to some of the things we've talked about. But one that I get asked all the time is, how many times a day should I be posting onto my Facebook page? Is there too much? Can you get to a point where it's too much? Is one a day enough? Is one a week enough? You know, what's the ideal, or is it different for different pages?
It's different for different sizes of pages. The bigger you are, you can post more posts because Facebook's not going to show the original post to all of the people in your audience. There is a point though where you can be too many because that will hinder your ability to have virals. And one of the things we depend on in the course that I teach is virals, because when you get a viral, you can jump. It kind of like levels you up really fast in your engagement, in your audience, and in the potential that your business has. So we want to protect how many times we post so that we can still have enough ability to go viral. So if everyone in your feed that likes your page has already seen all your content that day, well, Facebook's not going to let a post go viral because they've already seen it. They want to spread the love. So they don't just see one person in their feed all the time. So when you're under, say, 25,000, I suggest posting 4 times a day or less. So 2 to 4 times a day. And then when you get to about 25, you can start adding like up to 6. And then to 50 to 100, you can start moving to posting every like 8 times a day. To even up to 24 when you're over 100,000. But it depends on your audience. So when you're over 100,000, you'll have to test your audience and see. Because some audiences can still go viral when they have 8 posts a day, and some go viral if they have 24. It just depends on you. If you're not getting any virals at that point, or if you're having problems with engagement, back off. So.
Okay, so if you are seeing dips, that's a good thing to take away. Maybe pull back. You think that's a
if you're general. if you're at, say, 150,000 followers and you're not having high engagement, go back and look what posts are tanking. Like, if we have like a schedule system so you can see what kind of content is doing well, what kind of content's not doing well. And you're noticing like, okay, anytime I put a link up that's about flashes, it's not doing well. Well, you know what? I'm not going to put another link. We're going to take that section that I talk about flashes off. And now we're going to talk about natural lighting or whatever it is that you have in your spreadsheet. So you want to take what's not working and do more of what is.
Great. Another question that that actually came in this morning from Andrea was, what kind of what mix of posts should we be doing? So we've got sharing other people's content, sharing your own content on your own blog as a link. You've got video that you can upload, images or graphics or quotes or memes. Live video would be another one. What's the ideal mix? Again, that's probably depends, but I'd love to.
Oh, it just depends.
You can just give us the answer, though.
I know. Well, I kind of have a formula, and so far the formula is working. What I like to do is feed Facebook. So Facebook likes to have comments. What gets comments? When you give a status update with no links, no photo. So that's a, hey, what are you eating for breakfast today? Okay, that's so that feeds Facebook comments. Check, I did that today. Next one Facebook likes, shares. Meme photos tend to get more shares than any other type of content. So I'm going to put a meme up because I want to make sure I'm feeding Facebook shares. What gets comments? Videos and photos of certain different types of things, right? And lives sometimes get comments. So I want to do those to make sure I get comment. Or I want to have every different type of engagement. In addition to that, though, when you're under 100,000 fans, you also want to focus on getting more likes on your content than the other type. So while I still want shares, I still want comments, I don't want to say I'm never going to post a status update because I never get likes on those. I still want to have those, but I want to make sure I put a little bit extra content that tends to get more likes. So that tends to be videos that you're uploaded or photos you're uploading or that you're sharing videos or photos. And those get more likes because I can then invite the people who like that content to like my page. And then I can grow so fast because you can invite up to 500 people a day from each admin of your page to like your page. So as soon as you get a post that's going bonkers, you can put some ad dollars on it. And I'm talking like $2 in ad spend. Get that post to even higher levels just to invite every single person. You do that every day and you've grown greatly without even realizing it.
Yeah. And this is something that I think a lot of people have no idea that they can do, is that anytime anyone likes your page, you click on that number of likes and it opens up who has liked your page. And
it's content,
there,
liking your content.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Any post or any content. So you click on the number of likes and it shows you who's liked your page. And then it has a button that you can press that invites them to then like your page.
Yes.
If you do that within the first few hours or first 24 hours of them actually engaging with your content in that way, a lot of them come back and like your page. And this is brilliant.
It's really kind of cool because you can even do it. I've had people that I've gone back and invited them weeks later and it still works. The thing is that you have to have a page that people can identify with. So as long as your page, they gut, have a gut reaction of, yeah, I like that, then they're going to like you. Pro blogger, I consider myself to be a pro blogger. So if that popped up, hey, I don't remember necessarily the content that I liked from you, but I say I'm a pro blogger. So I'm going to automatically say, heck yeah, that's me. I'll like that.
Yeah. And this only works with pages under 100,000 fans.
So yes.
If you're bigger than that, bad luck.
Well, if you're close to 100,000, there's like a couple tricks you can do to kind of make it last a little longer. But yeah, pretty much it's gone after 100K.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm approaching that kind of mark on the pro blogger page. I think we're at 93,000 or something like that. So I know my days are numbered there.
I'll send you over the little spell, hack it a little bit.
That's great.
How to build and monetize your blog. This is Pro Blogger.
Another one is that I got asked, and you've kind of alluded to this, is, you know, how should your strategy change as your Facebook page grows? Obviously, we just talked about pages under 100,000 can do that, invites for likes. I guess once you get over that 100,000 mark, are you then looking for more shareable content rather than getting content that's going to get likes as much?
Yes. Facebook's algorithms changes then and doesn't sees you as an established page. So in Facebook land, you're not, I'm saying I know we're established when we've got 93,000 likes. We all know that, okay? But in Facebook's world, you're still in that growth phase when you're under 100,000 fans. So they give you extra growth abilities. When you're over 100,000 fans, they kind of throttle you. They start to throttle you a little bit. So you have, at that point, you depend more on shares to continue to grow. But you have more audience, so those shares can totally explode your page. So it's not like you're done growing. It's just your tools change a little bit.
Yeah. Have you seen people have multiple pages to, once they get over that 100,000 mark, to really target in on specific niches within their overall topic? And this is something we've been talking about with Digital Photography School. You know, we've got post-processing, we've got camera gear reviews, maybe we should be having multiple pages.
Yes. When you get over 300,000, now this is getting into that powwow phase.
Yeah.
I have a Facebook group that's got like 13,000 people in it, and it's too big to like connect with everybody. So we do breakout powwows whenever I feel like it. It's not very often. But when every now and then we'll have a powwow. When you're over 300,000, all those people, they get together. And when you're over 300,000, you start to have problems with being targeted. You have problems with sometimes your content's not doing well, or you're feeling like I'm having to link to other people and like what's in it for me a little bit, if that makes sense. So become your own neighborhood.
Yeah.
Done. Like, so we've got people who have vegetable gardening, regular gardening, organic gardening, outdoor fun in your home, you know, all of, now he's got five pages that are over 100,000 each. So now whenever he's sharing pages, he's just sharing his own. He's his own Facebook ecosystem. And And the cool thing too, is there's not that much of a difference between the reach of a 500,000 fan base and a 1 million fan base. The amount of potential per post is kind of the same. So when you're at that stage, instead of growing to the million, which is still really cool to get that number, okay? I was really excited with one of my pages got to 1 million. That said, it's just as powerful to have a 300,000, a 100,000, and a 500,000 page because you have more collective reach than you did if you had 1 million.
That's great. And what about those really at the beginnings of their Facebook page? We've talked, you know, up to 100,000, they should be doing that likable content, inviting people. Is there anything else that real new Facebook pages should be focusing upon?
There's a completely different strategy for the little guys. Sorry, the little pages. Yeah. We've grown little pages. We've had a person just a couple weeks ago, she started her page brand new. And I checked the stats this morning because somebody tagged me. She's at 180,000 fans. So this can happen really fast. So you can start in 6 weeks and grow fast. So, but anyways, so she started her page and she followed what I call the fast track plan, which is you want to be very sure to only attract who wants your content. So you're almost hyper selective when you're beginning to not except the fake fans. So like you don't want to invite your mom. You don't want to have your friends from your PTA association liking your page. You want the actual fans who can't wait to have that content in front of them. Yeah. So, and then you tell Facebook who that person is a little bit. So like with my cat's page, I'll put six posts up and I'll have a different types of posts. And I'll tell Facebook, I want all of these to go to cats and I'm going to put $2 on each of them or $1 on each of them, however low Facebook lets me go because I don't want to spend much money. I just want enough to see what content does well. And then I see, okay, anytime I talk about my cat and say it's a kid, okay, well that for some reason, that's what cat people want is their cat as a kid. So, okay, that's what they want. Now, where are those cat people? So I do another couple rounds of boosts just so I can find where those people are that are insanely passionate about my niche. So when it's crockpot cooking, I found a religious minority group that loves crockpots. I thought maybe soccer moms would be the crockpot people or busy working moms. The Mormon church has a lot of people that love crockpots. When I started targeting them, they shared my post to everybody and they kept commenting on it. And next thing you know, I exploded because I found who was most passionate. And so with the cat page that I have, I found them in no-kill shelters. So when I found where those people are that they can't, so you got to find who that person is. And once you find them, you can be like best ideas for kids and explode your page by over 100,000. Yeah. Over 100. I'm like hyperventilating. I'll go, are those numbers for real? She did that though by finding what type of content they wanted and almost getting rid of the people that aren't her fan.
And this really comes down to a lot of what you do teach is really doing a lot of work on thinking about who it is that you want to reach and understanding them and interviewing them, which is something that our listeners would have heard other guests talk about a lot as well, is really focusing on who it is that you want to have on your site and really position your page very well for them. I think it's really great advice to have.
Once you can serve those people that love cats and you love on them, they're going to love you on you with your content. They're going to spread your content. They're going to notice when you forget to post and you left your schedule empty that day. Yeah. People literally like stalk you down because they have found your address on the bottom of an email and let you know, hey, just FYI, I haven't heard from you. Did you disappear? It's building a community with your readers, and they will love you back and share your stuff and buy from you.
You're listening to Pro Blogger.
Two more questions. Actually, it's three, but one of them is kind of connected. So people have been asking pages versus groups is the question, but also live video is another one that got weaved into that question. Should we be doing live video? If so, for what? And are groups an alternative to a page, or do they really work hand in hand?
Well, I use them all kind of the same. I've got seven groups that are not part of my marketing. Okay. And then in my marketing, I've got like, I don't know, I haven't counted. There's way too many. So that I'm talking about groups that I'm admin over and that I created and run. Okay. But I also have pages that I've created and run, dozens of them. Okay. So you kind of need all three. There's three ways that people interact on Facebook, and to be an influencer, you kind of need to know and interact on all three levels. And that's your personal profile, and then your page, and then a group. And it doesn't necessarily have to be your group. A lot of groups are open to bloggers. I have groups that I let any blogger promote their own content in anytime they want to, as long as they do follow these rules. So there's other groups that are like that for bloggers too. So anyways, on your personal profile, you want to interact with other brands in your niche so that establishes you as an influencer. That then raises your admin ranking in your topic area. So next one is your page. That's where you can target new people to either go to your group, to join your email list, to do anything, to send your product, but you have to kind of do targeting from inside of a page. And so that's where you tell Facebook who you're going to be reaching. So like with Moolah, I have a bigger group than I do my page, but I need my page. My page is crucial because I would not be able to drive new people to my group if I didn't have my page. So there's lots. And then the group is where you can get that community. So we've had people, the Decluttering Club, she grew her Facebook page to 20,000, but then exploded her group like almost within like 2 months to 16K. And it's from her group that she's monetizing now. So it's interesting, but she wouldn't have been able to do that if she didn't have the page to feed the group. So you kind of need both. Now my pages, I typically monetize more personally through my pages than I do my groups as a blogger. But there's different monetization methods for everyone. So,
and maybe that's a question for another call, is how to monetize this. But last thing,
I made a couple hundred K just off my blogs last year. So it was really fun.
Okay, we need to book in that call.
I get all geeky. I made products. I like sell chalkboard labels and necklace. Yeah, I found things that they bought and sourced them. It was really fun.
That's great. So live video was the other question as part of that. What's its place in all of this?
Facebook loves live. It has like a short-term lifespan. So I don't suggest pages start doing lives until they've got like 4,000 to 10,000 fans, because in my mind, if you have an hour, spend that hour finding what's viral, spend that hour in other ways. But once you've got 10,000 fans that you can engage, start doing lives and using those lives to build that future post. So uploading video is also important because that has a longer tail. So it lasts on Facebook longer. So something from 2 years ago can go viral again today. Whereas live video, in 2 weeks, it's pretty much kind of dead unless you're continuing it with ads, which you can totally do. But I do suggest doing it like 1 to 2 lives a week, if possible, from your pages once you're between 4,000 and 10,000.
Yeah. We've actually found live video is great if you want someone to do something something now, like yes. right now, like we're launching right now, is happening now. Come and join us. But a video is much better if we want them to do something over the next month or so.
Yes.
So we've got a launch starting. We'll do a live to announce it, but then we'll put a video up that we then allow to continue to grow momentum over the month or so.
Yes. And for me as a blogger, I kind of prefer uploading videos because I want to do that hour of work one time and not have to do it all the time. So I do lives whenever, like you said, I'm demanding an action, but on my 500,000, my 200K pages, I'm not doing lives regularly because I don't want to have to be a slave to my page.
Yeah.
So I turn it on and I turn the videos on and I still come in, but,
yeah, I've seen a few people recently do the live and then download their live or get the video of the live and chop it up. So they get rid of the start and the end, which is more interactive, and they just have the middle bit, which is a teaching part, and they use that as an uploaded video later on, and that seems to work quite well.
Yeah, that only works if you don't have the same first 10 seconds. So Facebook tracks the first 10 seconds of your videos. So you can actually, if you've had a video go viral or you've had a live, you can chop it up. As long as it's not the same first 10 seconds, you can recycle it as much as you want. It's really kind of repackage it. It's, now you have two viral videos. It's really fun.
Yeah, that's great. Last question was around boosting. You've mentioned a few times you boost a dollar here, $2 there. If bloggers do have a little bit of money to throw, what's the best way to use those dollars to build their page and build their blog?
Always use, I guess, because time, there's like a lot, there's this whole strategy to it, but because of time, I'll just give you a couple of like do and don't rules. And my first tip with rules is to always use the ads manager to boost. Don't use the boost on your page because you're going to cannibalize your page unless you have custom audiences and stuff set up. So always boost within the ads manager and make sure that you exclude your page whenever you're boosting. That way your boost goes to people who don't know who you are. And so Facebook still sends out your organic traffic to the people who like your page, but people who don't know who you are now get a glimpse of how awesome your page is and why they should love you.
Great. Excellent. Good first tips there. Thank you so much, Rachel. We will have links to the audience growth pack where you'll get the 25 viral titles, 25 conversation starters. You'll get a list of banned words as well. Thank you for providing that. I know our readers are going to, or listeners are going to really enjoy.
Darren, this has been a blast.
Yeah, I loved it. Loved it. I've got about 10 other questions I need to ask you for next time. So I've been noting them down and I've got a couple of ideas that I'm going to go and implement myself. I think we need to start some more Facebook pages.
Well, you won't regret it. And if you're over 100K, it's really easy to start your second one now because Facebook kind of gives all that juice. And so you can share from that little page and it's really fun to see them kind of rise together.
Yeah. Very cool. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you, Darren. I appreciate it.
This is Pro Blogger.
Wow. Rachel has to be one of the most enthusiastic and knowledgeable Facebook presenters that I've ever come across. She's actually presenting at our Dallas event later in the year as well. So if you have been thinking about coming to the Dallas event, Success Incubator, I'll link to it on the show notes as well, but you can also find more information on that at problogger.com/success. Rachel does pack a lot of value into what she shares on her Facebook group and in her training as well. And what I love about what she said today, and I really want to emphasize this, is that she says that you really need to work out what Facebook wants. You heard her say it a couple of times in today's episode. Work out what Facebook wants and give Facebook that. Facebook wants content that will be shared, that people will comment upon. And so start with that. You know, many of us as bloggers look at Facebook through the lens of what we want. You know, we want traffic, we want engagement, we want comments. Well, those things, some of those things Facebook wants as well. But when you start with what Facebook wants, and importantly, and you heard her say this a few times today, start with what your readers want. That's a much better place to start with your strategy on Facebook. Don't start with what you want. Start with what Facebook wants, what your readers wants, and work from that place because it's going to give you a great foundation. Rachel's Facebook training course is opening up again in the next week or so. I'll link again where you can join a waitlist for that training course if you'd like to do that. But whether you take the course or not, I really would recommend you get into a Facebook group. I'll link to that on the show notes as well, and download those downloadables too. Today's show notes, where you can get all the links to all of what Rachel's doing, her course, her Facebook group, and the downloadables, are at problogger.com/podcast/208. Problogger.com/podcast/208, and get those downloadables at problogger.com/growth. I am an affiliate for Rachel's courses. I want to disclaim that right up front. I want to be very transparent about that, but I will emphasize that I paid for her course myself when I first saw it, and I did the course personally. My team haven't done it. I did it, and I would highly recommend it from having engaged in that as well. Again, if it's for you, that's great, but there's a lot of great free stuff there as well. Thanks for listening. I look forward to chatting with you next week in episode 209 of the podcast. Again, today's show notes over at problogger.com/podcast/208. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to ProBlogger. If you'd like to comment on any of today's topics or subscribe to the series, find us at problogger.com/podcast. Tweet us at ProBlogger. Find us at facebook.com/ProBlogger or search ProBlogger on iTunes.
Before I go, I want to give a big shout out and say thank you to Craig Hewitt and the team at Podcast Motor, who've been editing all of our podcasts for some time now. Podcast Motor have a great range of services for podcasters at all levels. They can help you to set up your podcast, but also offer a couple of excellent services to help you to edit your shows and get them up with great show notes. Check them out at podcastmotor.com.